Revived Thoughts is a production of Revive Studios.
This is Troy Angel, and you are listening to Revive Thoughts.
Do not let God, who is speaking in ordinary and extraordinary ways to you, speak in vain.
Every episode, we bring you a different voice from history in a sermon that they delivered today. We're going back to the 1600s to listen to a sermon by John Flavel. Troy, we've done a Flavel before, and I remember It sticks in my head because we probably spent like 15 minutes off air before we started recording debating on how to pronounce Flavel, and I feel pretty confident we got it.
It's Flavel, and it's not Flavel or Flavor Flav or something like that. It is Flavel. Yeah. I remember it too. It stuck in my mind for the same reason, but also because John Flavel has a great story, and I'm actually really excited because when I was doing the research on his episode this time, I actually found like his memoirs. The stories and stuff we have this time are not from like people doing research on him, but they're from his actual, like his official memoirs, which is cool. I'm always excited when I can get, you know, as close to their source information and not just the research written about that information.
So yeah, there's some great quotes in there.
But first, Joel, some positive responses to Revive Thoughts. We always try to read the messages and things you send, and everywhere I find them, I will read them. I'm always trying to learn and get feedback from everybody and understand, you know, where you guys are at. They're very encouraging messages, but we try to read them on air as well. This one came in to us from an email. Dear Troy and Joel, what an honor to write to you. Your voices feel like those of old friends after several years of listening to Revive Thoughts. Thank you for your work that has helped build me up, enrich my theology and relationship with Christ, and give me such great references to discuss with those around me. The show has helped sustain me through medical school, and I often double back to old favorites for courage when needed, even this past weekend going back to Dietrich Bonhoeffer's Overcoming Fear, Josh. Josh, I want to say, hey, obviously extremely grateful for those words. Can't believe we'd help you through medical school. It's awesome that you've been listening to us for years. And I have to say, I also have some old favorites, and Dietrich Bonhoeffer's Overcoming Fear is, in my opinion, the classic. That was the, you know, when we explained to people, when we were way back, when we were trying to tell people what we were doing, that the person who recorded that episode for us, that was the episode I used where I was like, look, this is what we're doing. This is why it's important. And when people heard that episode, they would go, oh, I get it. This is why it's important. So I have a very special place in my heart. If it were not for Dietrich Bonhoeffer's Overcoming Fear, I don't think we'd have Revive Thoughts.
To this day, I think it still maybe be the most shared episode that we've ever put out. It definitely was the first real turning point in that those early days of Revive Thoughts, for good reason. It's a great sermon. Again, it's still probably our best. Josh, thank you so much for those kind words. I actually told my wife about that, about his email. I was like, look at these kind things that Josh said about our show.
Every time we, you know, and I know we read these, and I'm not trying to read them like to brag, like, look how amazing we are. It's just like, I want people to know that we really do care. And I do think it's encouraging to just see how much church history is impacting people. But also, it blows my mind. Every single time we get a message and I read it, I go, wow, I can't believe that Revive Thoughts, you know, this many years later is still having this kind of an impact. It's a blessing. I would say, if anything, I feel like we're getting even more responses and hearing from more people these days than we used to. This is another one. Came in on email, I believe, again as well. Hi, I have felt a call to take a dive into past sermons, and your Revive Thoughts podcast has been a blessing. Chelsea, another one that came in by Plez. This was another email. But I am very much in agreement with Troy. Oh, sorry, this was on the Revive History, Revive Conversation on the History Conferences one.
I saw this come in, I knew you were going to include it because I knew you wanted to gloat about, you know, people favoring your opinion.
That's what it was. I had to tell him, I won the argument. No, that was not it. I was actually looking for the part where I just thought he had some interesting thoughts here. But I was mainly looking for the part where he said, I didn't understand from a business perspective, nor should it function that way. I thought there was a part where you said something more direct about us.
So anyway, you didn't tell the listeners, this is in regards to our Revive conversations about whether you should pay for conferences or not.
Whether you should pay for conferences or not, Plez, thank you for writing in, and thank you for picking the correct side. No, I'm just kidding. Thank you so much for writing in. And finally, I really like this response we got on Spotify from Richard, who says, Bible, phenomenal, wonderfully encouraging episode. Shows how phenomenal the Bible was in the life of this man. Wonderfully read, too, by David Martin. And if you do not know, Bible is a little bit of an inside joke that I think is now forming right up there with my hopeful heart, Eric. If you don't know why we said Bible, you're guessing you need to listen to a little bit more of our episodes because it came up recently why he did that. I love that he put Bible on that. Just solid stuff. So thank you so much for sending that, Richard. I understand. I got it. I knew why you did that. That's not nothing. So we have now if all things work out, we will now have two inside jokes for our audiences between Eric and Bible if it keeps up. Where will this end? I don't know. Speaking of things that we need to catch up on, Joel, how's reading Screwtape Letters going? Have we got any further on that?
Ooh, you know, haven't touched it if I'm real. I do have a flight coming up though. Maybe I'll grab an audiobook
and
try to double down and muscle my way through.
I will say we got at least, I remember at least two different messages where people were like, I can't believe Joel hasn't read Screwtape Letters. Like, Troy, you need to get him to read that straight away. That's crazy. So,
you know what we should do? We should have a read through series on Revive Thoughts where you read book to me club? Screwtape Letters. Yeah, book club. Yeah, a live,
there we go.
A live recollecting of Screwtape Letters. That would work.
I could do that. That would be fun. I would have a blast with a book club like that. You don't even tempt me. If you recall, Joel, we almost started a show called Book Club, and then I moved to Cambodia on you and threw it off. But we were actually hot in the middle of that, so it would not be the first time Book Club has come up. I'm not opposed at all. All right, let's jump into this.
Maybe we can do like a we should do like a chapter summary at the end of each show or something like that, where we can just talk about what that's, you know, like a little like 3-minute segment or something like that.
I like this idea. Joel, off air, we need to flesh this out. There's something, there's a great idea here. This is happening. It's happening live, and I like where you're going with it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We're here to talk about Flavel, though. John Flavel, to be exact. Again, covered him before. It's been a hot second, though. And he was born in 1627 in England, which is peak English Civil War controversy era. So, and we've covered several speakers that embody this era before. It's a beautiful time and a terrifying time to be a believer in Europe during this era, because the King of England there was a lot of stuff going down, and for a segment of time, Christianity and gatherings were outlawed entirely. Lots of different speakers that we've covered on this show were bold and had gatherings out in the woods and such like that. So Flavel is one of these people that lived throughout this era of how long? It was like a 30-year period. How long was this period where they weren't allowed to gather?
It was just a little short of 30 years. And Flavel was, we've had several different people. My mind's blanking on like immediate names. However, John Bunyan would probably be one of the most famous, who was in jail for 12 years. And that's where he wrote Pilgrim's Progress. And so lots of big names here in this era, all over the place. To put it as, I like how you said it, was, there was a lot going on. That's a good way to describe it.
There's a lot going on. Yeah. But it was also a time in history where, like, you're coming out of the Middle Ages, like religion as a whole, Christianity as a whole, was booming up around and through these eras to varying degrees. His father was a very proud and prominent preacher. He preached out on the countryside, and it's amazing. We have some great accounts about Flavel's life, some from him, some from other authors that were recording these events, but they speak about his father leading Bible studies in their small town out on the countryside. When, again, due to certain laws that were recently passed, soldiers broke in and demanded the pastor because their gathering was illegal, technically. And although he was dressed as a pastor at the time, one of the buddies, one of his friends, passed him a colorful jacket, and he put it on to disguise himself. And so they didn't know who the exact pastor was in their gathering there. The whole lot was rallied up and shipped off to jail, where they had to pay a big fine in order to get out. This is also, though, while the plague is kind of rampaging across London here, and so while they were able to have some friends bail them out of jail, essentially, while they were there in London, they did catch the plague, and his father would pass away from it. Both of his parents, right, Troy? They both died of the plague from this imprisonment.
They both died, yeah. Which, by the way, is we covered this, or we don't cover this specific story. This was a new story to me. However, we cover this entire event in the London Fire episode. I highly encourage you to listen to that episode. We put it out on the public feed about a year ago. It was open to Patreons earlier than that. And I love that story. And I told it to one of my classes recently, and they were just listening to it the whole way. And they got to the end. They're like, that was a story of ups and down twists that we were not expect. When you go into that story, you're like, okay, a story about a fire in London. Like, what's the big deal? And you get to the end of it and you're like, there was alchemists, there was a conspiracy, there were assassination attempts. I mean, it is a wild time. So definitely go check that one out if you haven't. This would have been around John's 37th year when his parents died. But going back a little bit, when he was younger, he went to Oxford. And at only 23, he was made a preacher, which back then was kind of young. I remember we had an episode by Andrew Gray. I think he started preaching at 21. And like, you weren't supposed to be preaching that young. You're supposed to start much later, but these guys were just that good. They were that faithful. People appreciated them and respected them that much. So they moved up the bar for them so that they could go a little younger. Now, for about 10 years, he had worked in England as a preacher. But then if you know your history, you would know that the king came back, overthrew the Commonwealth, and ended the Puritanism that had been reigning. And as soon as he kind of got into power, he immediately said, if you don't join the Church of England, if you don't come under my authority, we're kicking you out. And he joined a group of Puritans called the Nonconformists, who did not join back with the Church of England, but were basically outlaws. One rule they enforced, which ended his ministry in Dartmouth, was that a pastor could not work within 5 miles of his home. This today would be an easy rule. It would not be convenient, but you could totally get around it because today we have cars and motorcycles and, you know, things like that. But back then they walked pretty much everywhere, unless he had a horse, but horses were expensive, and even that doesn't really make it an easy ride. And it is a snowy winters. It basically ends your ministry in these places. And so he moved, and while he was moving, it says that the whole church followed him out of town, that they basically were like leaving with him, watching him go, helping carry his belongings so they couldn't really go any further. And then they gave like a long, tearful farewell to him. There's two different moments actually in his story that are almost Old Testament, reminding me of almost like Moses or something. And this is one of them where he's leaving the church he's been with, and the whole town is following him, crying and saying goodbye. And it just sounds very, on the one hand, very sweet, shows the impact. On the other hand, very sad. I'm sure it was really hard for him to go through that. At another time, at the new town he would go to, he would preach in the woods 3 miles from town where they would meet. They would sing songs. But at one point, soldiers showed up to catch them while they were doing this. And they did catch a few of the people that were there. But Flavel himself had actually been kind of like secretly snuck out by his church. And like a couple hours later, they regathered together, reassembled somewhere else in the woods. And they just continued the service and were like, okay, go back to the sermon. So he went back to preaching and finished the sermon. Those guys who had gotten caught, they didn't get killed like his parents did, but they did have to pay a heavy fine. And when I hear these stories, I just have to remind myself, this is England. Like this is not, you know, Saudi Arabia or China or North Korea, like places where you think this kind of stuff would happen. This is England a few hundred years ago, where people are getting arrested. People are dying because of these arrests for just wanting to worship God. And it is wild to me to think of just how different times used to be.
Yeah, we really need to create, and I know why we haven't done this yet, because it's complicated and we're pretty sure we'd screw something up in it, but we really need to create like a 30-minute crash course on the English Civil War that we can like reference for people, like point to people, because every time we do one of these episodes, we kind of like, we bump into certain details of it that are sure to be interesting for people, but like, A, we don't have time to explain it all, and C, like, there's like 8 layers to what we just said that is really hard to kind of flesh out. But I feel like if there was like a really condensed, easy, it would have to be very generalized overview of the English Civil War that we could just put out in like a 30-minute episode. And that way, whenever we talk about this, we could say, go listen to that if you want a better understanding of, you know, what the country is going through during this like 50-year time frame.
So I love this idea in theory, Joel, and I think it is a good idea. We should do this because I think at this point, after having taught a couple of history classes and taught this subject in the London Fire episode, I do think I could do it. The only problem is, Joel, I know myself, and I know that you're going to suddenly get a 900-page script, and I'm going to be like, here we go.
See, the thing
Parts
is, it
one
has
through
to be...
88.
It's got to be short. Right, so it's got to be. Can you do it in 30 minutes? That's the real question.
All right, and we're going to look at the script and it's going to say, starting in the year 804. And you're going to go, Troy, no, this was not
it's
what we
start with you going, for. Before we understand the English Civil War, we're going to have to go back. We're going to have to
so
go.
So we're going to go back.
In
so
the beginning, God to created yeah, the heavens and the earth.
You see, and Eve took the fruit, and that's that's exactly what goes wrong with these ideas. Because several of our deep dives started out with that simple premise of, well, what if this, and they turned into something completely different. But I think I can do it. So we'll put that on our burner of ideas. We'll put that right next to book club.
So eventually, King Charles relaxed the laws that were going on. If you want to know more about that, listen to our 30-minute explanation of English Civil War that hasn't come out yet. So John Flavel immediately went back to Dartmouth and opened up his church again and preached as often as he could. The change of the laws technically meant that he, like, they weren't completely lifted. They were just kind of relaxed a bit. So he technically had to be classified as a seasonal preacher, but, like, in reality, he was doing this as much as he could. And during this time, he decided to try to go to London. London, of course, across the waterway there, which required a boat ride. And leading up to this trip, he had a dream that predicted that he would have a bad time traveling to London. So he was a bit cautious. And sure enough, they ran into a large storm on the ocean there, on the sea. And everyone was terrified and sure that they would die. And from his memoir, we have this account from it. I'm going to read it to you here. Quote, "The master seaman concluded that unless God changed the winds, there was no hope for life. It was impossible for them to weather in Portland, so that they must of necessity be wrecked on the rocks or on the shore. Upon this, Mr. Flavel called all hands that could be spared into his cabin to pray. But the violence of the tempest was such that they could not prevent themselves from being thrown from one side as unto the other as the ship was tossed. And not only so, but mighty seas broke upon them as if they would have drowned in their very cabin. Mr. Flavel, in the danger, took a hold of two pillars of the cabin bed and, calling upon God, begged mercy upon himself and the rest in the ship. Amongst other arguments and prayer, he made use of this, that if he and his company perish in that storm, the name of God would be blasphemed. The enemies of religion would say that though he escaped their hands on shore, yet divine vengeance had overtaken him at sea. In the midst of prayer, his faith and hope were raised, inasmuch that he expected a gracious answer, so that, committing himself and his company to the mercies of God, he concluded the duty. No sooner was the prayer ended, but one came down from the deck, crying, 'Deliverance, deliverance! God is a God hearing prayer.' In a moment, the wind was coming far west. So, sailing before it, they were brought safely to London." And reading that quote for the first time, I even asked Troy, I was saying, what is his argument to God here? His argument is that people would accuse God of letting him die at sea if they did go down. He was kind of trying to guilt trip God a little bit there, not unlike a Moses.
Yeah, it reminded me of Moses standing, but this is my other Old Testament moment. It reminded me of Moses where God says, you know, "Moses, stand back. I'm going to wipe these people from the earth." And God goes, Moses does that. Like, "Oh, if you do that, the Egyptians, they will accuse you as not being strong enough to bring them into the land." That's basically the same thing Flavel is doing here. He's like, "God, if you let us die here, the Church of England wins," you know, kind of thing. And I just think that's so interesting how he did that. And, I've never had to pray like that, and I don't know that I ever will, and I don't know that I would think to do it that way, if that makes sense. So it was interesting to see that kind of Old Testament-y moment come to life.
Very different mindset.
When he was very different mindset. Now, while he was in London, while he was there, he was praying and fasting when soldiers showed up, and they were so close, like they came in to grab them, and they were so close to getting taken that that Flavel said as he was leaving the area, like running away, he could hear the soldiers grabbing the guy behind him. He found out that the man had tried to get out of there, but a lady with very long hair had gotten her hair caught on the stairs, and when he bent down to kind of like pull her hair out, the soldier grabbed him in that moment, and sadly, that soldier went to the jail and died there and did not recover. So, I mean, the man that got grabbed there. So that's how close Flavel was to getting caught and maybe even dying as well. Now, he was asked to come and be the preacher of the church in London that would replace that guy who died. They said, "Oh, you know, that was our pastor. Could you come?" And they really tried to get him to move there, but Flavel said, "No, my home is Dartmouth. This is where God has me." And he just, no matter how much they tried, he stayed with his local congregation, this much smaller town, but he stayed where he had always been. And now, to be fair, if I, the guy who had the job before me died and I had almost, you know, died with him, I might also be a little bit hesitant to take the job. But I really do think it was more that he just loved that church in Dartmouth. He loved his people and he didn't want to abandon them. Now, Flavel has other great stories. On our last episode, there's the story. It is one of the most incredible stories. I tell this story to my students and anyone I can, of a man who accepted Christ 87 years after Flavel died because he remembered the sermon he heard in his church as a kid. One of the craziest stories. And of a man that tried to commit suicide that Flavel basically prayed to life. So go listen to our other John Flavel episodes if you want to hear those, because those stories are just... they're stories that you hear them and you go, wow, that is a genuinely, I can't believe that happened, but it really makes you go, wow, the word of God, it can just do things that's crazy. But here's another one. When Mr. Flavel was back in London in 1673, an old bookseller there, Mr. Boulder, gave him the following story, that sometime before there came into his shop a gentleman to inquire for some books. And Mr. Boulder told him he had none, but showed him that he had Mr. Flavel's little treatise, Keeping the Heart. And he said, you should read this, and assured him it would do him more good than the books he was asking for. And it says in the quote that they're playbooks. I don't know what a playbook is. The gentleman read the title and, glancing upon several pages here and there, broke out into those expressions of what a fool, what a fanatic, what is this? Who made this book? But Mr. Boulder begged him and said, go ahead, buy it and read it. You'll love this. And told him he had no cause to censure it so bitterly. So at last he bought it, but told him, well, I'll buy it, but I'm not going to read it. Now, what will you do with it then? Said Mr. Boulder. He said, I will tear it and burn it, said he, and send it back to the devil. Mr. Boulder told him that he should not have it then if he's going to do that. But upon this, the gentleman promised, okay, yeah, I'll read it fine. And Mr. Boulder told him if he disliked it, he would return it with his money. So this conversation with this bookseller and the guy, I don't want to read it. No, I'll burn it. No, don't do that. Okay, fine, I'll read it. But okay, if you don't like it, you can get your money back. Okay. So a month later, the gentleman came to the shop again in a very modest attitude and habit and clothes with a serious face and spoke to Mr. Boulder. So he said, sir, I most heartily thank you for putting this book into my hands. I bless God that moved you to do it. It has saved my soul. Blessed be God that I ever came into your shop that day. And then he bought 100 more of those books and told him, I'm going to give them to the poor who don't have enough money to buy them. And so left him praising and admiring the goodness of God. And so it pleased God to bless the sermons, discourses, and writings of Mr. Flavel. Now, Flavel was a preacher, but you can see his way of preaching wasn't easy. And so one of the things he would do is he would write letters to his congregants, basically back and forth, encouraging them because he couldn't go and see them face to face. He couldn't always preach to them. So he wrote lots of letters, and Flavel hated it. He wanted to be there in person. His letters are just him agonizing over, oh, I wish we could do this in person. I hate these rules and these laws, and these persecution made life difficult for him. However, those letters have been put into a book, compiled, that's the word I was looking for. And that book itself has had a huge impact on many, many different people who've read it. And you can go find those letters. They're still out there being sold. Just a list of names who have said this book had a huge impact on them. Samuel Davies, Archibald Alexander, Charles Spurgeon, Robert Murray McChain, Samuel Miller, James Alexander, John the Cross, Thomas Murphy, all claim that the letters that he wrote had a profound impact on their life. And so it just goes to show that even though he was frustrated by his circumstances, because he had to write those letters, it impacted history. And it reminds me of Paul. You know, Paul always said, I wish I could be there in person. But those letters were then put into scripture and were, you know, are a part of our New Testament today. I'm not, Flavel's letters are not scripture, but it's the same kind of idea here, where if he hadn't been taken from them, those letters wouldn't have been able to reach all those other people.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Flavel's life was not easy, but through his life and writings, God used him to make a lasting impact. During this sermon, he talks about pain and suffering that will inevitably come and how we must get ready for it now.
from your beds a sloth. Awake from your security, O you saints. Get up on your watchtowers and tremble in yourselves that you may rest in the day of evil. Habakkuk 2, verses 1 to 3 and 16. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand an evil day, and having done all, to stand. Ephesians 6, verses 11 to 13. Let it never be said of your dwellings, as it is said of the houses of the wicked, their houses are safe from fear. Job 21, 9. Caesar Augustus, hearing of one who is deeply in debt, who yet slept hardly, sent for the man's pillow, supposing there was some strange virtue in it. I wonder what pillow you have. Oh, you drowsy saints, that you can sleep so quietly on it, when things all about you are conspiring trouble and threatening danger. Can you sleep like Jonah when seas of wrath are tumbling and roaring all around you, and threaten to entomb you and all your pleasures? The stork in heaven knows her appointed times. Jeremiah 8, verse 7. Has God not made you wiser than the fowls of heaven? Perhaps the sound of some present judgment might startle you a little, like a sudden clap of thunder in the air. But how soon does sloth and security prevail and overcome you again? They say poison by being habituated may be made harmless. We're so used to, or rather hardened under, calamities that nothing moves or effectively awakens us. Lord, what will the end of these things be? Will you surprise your people unprepared? Will your judgments find them secure and leave them desperate? Oh, that God would persuade you to gather yourselves together. Ye gather together, not in an unlawful and seditious way, but in the way of duty. Before the decree bring forth, before the day pass as a chaff. Zephaniah 2, verses 1 and 2. Prepare to meet your God. Prepare your faith, your love, courage, and so on, before God calls you to exercise them. Besides all the aforementioned benefits of a prepared spirit, consider the following motives to excite you to prepare for this duty. Motive 1. God has given you many calls to this work. The Lord has spoken and called from heaven to you. Will you be deaf to his calls? He has called you by the word. God will have it cry to you first, because he gives the first honor to his word. He has given all of his prophets one mouth. He spake by the mouth of his holy prophets, Luke 1, verse 70, and they have warned you faithfully. He has called you by the rod. This also has a loud voice. Psalm 2, verse 5, Micah 6, verse 9. Men of understanding will hear this voice. Those who will not hear it will be lashed by it until they are sick from smiting, Micah 6, verse 13. And he has called you by prodigious and portentous signs in the heavens and the earth, unparalleled in any other age. These are loud voices to all who regard the works of the Lord or the operations of his hand. Eusebius calls them God's sermons to the world. Oh, for wisdom to consider what God's hands are in these things. One observes that as they are the plainest and most obvious to sense, so they are commonly the last sermons that God intends to preach to the nations before he inflicts his punishment on them. If they don't repent, do not let God, who is speaking in ordinary and extraordinary ways to you, speak in vain. Your preparations for suffering are the most probable means of preventing your fall and ruin by those sufferings. Motive number 2. Suffering proves fatal and destructive to some, to the self-confident and careless ones. Those who are diligent and faithful in the use of God's means are safe from danger. Christ lays our constancy and perseverance very much on our forecasting the worst that may fall out. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand. Separate Christ in your thoughts from all worldly advantages, and put the question to your own soul. O my soul, can you embrace or love a naked Christ? Can you be content to be impoverished, imprisoned, and suffer the loss of all for him? You are most likely to cleave faithfully to him. When the case is truly presented to you in your eyes, can it seem a little thing to be unable to stand in such an evil day? If you fall away from Christ, then all you have worked for is lost. Gideon's one illegitimate son destroyed all 70 of his other sons, Judges 8:29-9:5. This one act renders all former actions and professors vain. And if you fall, you will be brought into a more perfect bondage to the devil than ever. Yes, ordinarily apostates are judicially given up to be persecutors, and are seldom or never restored again by grace. Hebrews 6:4-6. Those who lick up their vomit seldom throw it up anymore. The fall brings you almost as low as the unpardonable sin from which none ever rise again. In some cases, a judge will not allow the offender's book. Is it not then a choice and desirable mercy to escape and prevent such a fall as this? O good souls, steadily and diligently work on your preparations. Prepare, or you will perish. Motive number 3, preparing your spirit for suffering is the best response to the grace of God in affording you such choice helps and advantages as you have enjoyed. How long have you enjoyed the free liberty of the gospel, shining radiantly among you? This sun has not risen on some nations, and to many on whom it has shined, it is like a remote and feeble winter sun. But you have lived, as it were, under the line. It has been over your heads and shed its richest influences on you. God's ministers, who were not only appointed to be watchmen, Ezekiel 3:17, but trumpeters to reveal danger, Numbers 10:8, have faithfully warned you of a day of trouble and given you their best assistance to make you ready for it. Their joy, even their life, is bound up in your stability in such a day of trial. Does not everyone call to you in the words of the apostle, "Therefore, my brethren, dearly beloved and longed for, my joy and crown, so stand fast in the Lord, my dearly beloved"? Will it not cut them to the very heart if, after all their consuming labor among you, they still leave you unready, still enemies to the cross of Christ, and impossibly enabled to be reconciled and persuaded to suffering work for Christ? I remember reading of the Athenian king Codrus, who was informed that the oracle had prophesied that the people whose king would be slain in battle would be the conquerors. On hearing that news, he disguised himself, went into the enemy's quarters, and provoked a quarrel in which he was killed in order to make his people victorious. How glad would your ministers be, no matter what became of their lives and liberties, if you might conquer and overcome in a day of temptation? If they are offered up on the sacrifice and service of your faith, they can still rejoice and joy with you all. Such is their zeal and longing after your security and welfare. But if you still remain an unready people and become a prey to temptation, how inexcusable will you be? Motive 4. Remember how ready the Lord Jesus was to suffer the hardest and vilest things for you. The wrath, both of God and man, was squeezed out into the bitter cup put into his hands to drink for you. Never did any man undergo such sufferings as Christ. Consider the dignity of his person. He was in the form of God and might have stood on his peerage and equality with him. He is a sparkling diamond of heaven, the darling of the Father's soul, Isaiah 42:1. Glorious is the only begotten of the Father, John 1:14. Yes, he is glory itself, and the very brightness of his glory, Hebrews 1:3. He is fairer than the children of men, Psalm 45:2. For him to be so debased, below so many thousands of his own creatures, to become a worm and no man, Psalm 22:6, was an astonishing humiliation. It was Jeremiah's lament that those who were brought up in scarlet embraced dunghills, that princes were hanged up by the hands, and the faces of elders were not revered. But what is that compared to the humiliation of the Lord of glory? Consider that he suffered in the prime and flower of his years. He suffered and died when full of life and feeling and more capable of an intense sense of pain than others. For he was of a singular constitution. All the while he hung on the tree, his sense of pain was not at all blunted or decayed. Mark 15, verses 37 and 39. Consider the manner of his death. It was the death of the cross, which was a rack of torture to Christ. For in reference to the distension of his body on the cross, it is spoken, I may tell all my bones. Psalm 22, verse 17. And consider that in all this, God hid his face from him. When Stephen suffered, he saw the heavens opened. Many of the martyrs were seized and transported with ecstasies of joy in their sufferings. But Christ suffered in the dark. He suffered in his soul as well as in his body. And the sufferings of his soul were the very soul of his sufferings. It was the Father's wrath that lay so heavy on him and put him into such an agony that there was never another instance given like his. His sweat, great drops or clots of blood, that fell from his body to the ground. He began to be sore amazed and to be very heavy, even sorrowful unto death. Yet, as bitter as the cup of Christ was, he freely and willingly drank it up. He prepared himself to be offered up a sacrifice and gave his back to the smiters and longed exceedingly for the time until it came. If Christ so cheerfully prepared and addressed himself to such sufferings as these for you, should you not prepare yourselves to encounter any difficulty or hardships for him? Do you not consider this a just and fair conclusion from the sufferings of Christ for you? For as much then as Christ has suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind. 1 Peter 4, verse 1. Oh, waste no more time. Do not feed yourself with fancies and groundless presumptions of immunity and peace. Instead, foresee difficulties and fit yourselves to bear them.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Revived Thoughts. Today's sermon was narrated by Tom Sullivan of the Narrated Puritan.
Yeah, Tom Sullivan has been somebody who's been on the show before. Famously, he did our Jonathan Edwards Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God episode. He also does old sermons of the past with his show, The Narrated Puritan, which I believe is on Sermon Audio and sometimes on YouTube as well. He, unlike us, does not edit the sermons, and he doesn't have a different voice. It's always his voice. But if you enjoy listening to his voice, definitely go check out The Narrated Puritan. He's done an extremely, unbelievably large amount of sermons and books and classes and stuff like that. So he's definitely a person, if you're looking for resources and want to learn more about this stuff, you can't get enough of it, I would go check out his work. If you enjoyed this episode of Revived Thoughts, we encourage you to share it, send it to other people, let others know about this episode, let others know about this important subject of getting ready and preparing for times of suffering, because we know that someday these things will come. And so it's good to get ready for them before they do and to just acknowledge that it is always on the way. I think I've heard it said that, you know, you're either in a valley or you're in a mountain peak. And if you're in a mountain peak, you're going to be in a valley soon. And or another way it's been said is you're either living through a storm, you're just coming out of a storm, or storm clouds are forming on the horizon. You know, it's not a negative thing. It's just the reality of this world with spiritual warfare and the reality of this world of sin. This world does not, you know, love Christians. We will be hated by the world. And the reality is that pain and suffering is a part of our walks with God. As it was for Christ, so it will be for us. And so since we know that is how it will be for us, let us prepare and get ready now before it comes. And if you are in one of those times of pain and suffering, know that they do not last forever. This is Troy and Joel, and this is Revived Thoughts.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.